Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 53, Tears and Stitches. When it was my podcast anniversary, a range of people suggested topics. And someone definitely asked me for an episode on tears. I think it might have been KTP, but I'm not entirely sure because unfortunately I seem to have lost the tweet in which it was requested. So here goes for whoever it was asked me an episode on tears and stitches. Having a tear or a cut, known as an episiotomy, that needs stitching, is extremely common. 90% of women having their first vaginal birth will have some form of graze, tear, or cut on the perineum. The perineum being the bit of skin and muscle between the vagina and the anus. In the programme notes, I've enclosed some information from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists, which has some simple diagrams which might help you. During pregnancy or birth, women can feel fearful about this chance of tearing. And so I do hope talking about it here can help, explaining why there's no need to be frightened. That there are things you can do during late pregnancy and your birth that reduce the chance of needing stitches, and that if you do need stitches, they often heal very quickly with very little problem. One of the questions I'm often asked is how many stitches do I need, or how many stitches am I having? It's almost like a cut on your finger in A&E. People come back from having had an emergency set of stitches, proud of how many stitches they've had. And I find this difficult to answer because the answer is not straightforward. It's usually, strictly speaking, three very long stitches. This is because the perineum is three-dimensional, so unlike stitches on your finger that might just bring skin edges together on the surface, we need to stitch the vaginal skin, called mucosa, the outside skin of the perineum, what you can actually visibly see, and the muscles in between. And the reason I say three long stitches is we often use what's called a continuous suture. This means that we start, tie a knot, and then do multiple stitches with the same piece of thread. This means less knots, and partly this is because tight knots tend to cause more discomfort and be more painful to sit on. The skin stitch we try and use is a technique called subcuticular, which means the stitches are hidden underneath the skin. Again, because it's usually much more comfortable for the woman that way. And we use stitches that dissolve, so there's nothing that needs taking out at a later point. As the tear heals, the stitches will be gradually absorbed by the body. Sometimes during this process, little pieces of stitch fall out, and that isn't anything to worry about. The stitching thread looks a little bit like sewing cotton, so don't get frightened if you see small threads that look like that, perhaps when you're going to the toilet or changing the pad in your pants. That can be completely normal. It doesn't mean something's gone badly wrong. The actual stitching will be done by a doctor or midwife. One of the first skills a newly qualified midwife is taught is stitching. Of course, she will have seen lots of stitching or suturing as a student, and she will have had training on the anatomy and some practice on some models. But then she'll be taught by being directly supervised by a more senior midwife or practice development midwife. She'll start by stitching very small tears, and then as she gains more experience, she'll move on to more complex ones. Some types of deeper or more difficult tear are only stitched by doctors. And sometimes the stitching is difficult because the muscles and skin are very swollen and more fragile, having just gone through a labour or birth. This means the stitches we're using to repair can tear through that tissue and increase the amount of damage if we're not careful, gentle, and respectful in the way we do the stitching. We tend to categorise tears by what is torn and how deep they are or where they are anatomically. A first degree tear is a very small tear that just involves the skin. As the baby's born and the head presses down on the perineum and crowns, the perineum stretches and it thins. So even though in pregnancy this tissue can be quite thick, by the end of labour, when a tear might happen, the damage can be much more superficial than you think. Sometimes a first degree tear doesn't even need stitching at all. We stitch tears either because we're trying to stop bleeding, because a tear, the blood vessels are torn and may lead to blood loss, or because we're trying to restore the anatomy, i.e. make it look and feel as much as possible like it was before, bringing the torn edges together, trying to make it look symmetrical, trying to make it the same sort of size, not gaping or not too tight. The most common type of tear we see is a second degree tear. This involves the two layers of skin I mentioned and the muscle in between. This means we need to stitch it to bring the muscle and skin back together. Although the skin stitch is important and is the end result that the woman may feel or see if she looks at herself with a mirror, I was always taught that the key to a good repair is the support you give the muscles. If the muscle is well stitched, it will bring the skin edges together automatically and the tear will heal well. We always want to stitch things as soon as possible after the birth to get the best possible healing result for the woman, as well as to minimise blood loss. This can often mean we're quietly stitching away while she's enjoying skin to skin with her baby, and we're in the privileged position to be privy to those first few minutes meeting her baby and getting to know it. It's obviously really important that a woman has good pain relief for her stitches. If she hasn't had much pain relief during labour, we will often give an injection of local anaesthetic, similar to what you might have if you go to the dentist for treatment. This is an injection that will scratch and sting when it's given, but which numbs the area that we're going to stitch. It can work quite quickly in a matter of minutes, so we may give some local anaesthetic while the woman uses some gas and air, and then once it's working, we'll start the stitching. If the woman has an epidural, we'll make sure it's well topped up. And if there's a more severe tear and she hasn't had an epidural, we'll stitch in theatre with the help of a spinal anaesthetic. A third degree tear is a tear that crosses the whole of the perineum, reaching the muscles that control the bowel. The NMPA, National Maternal and Perinatal Audit, shows around 3.5% of women will have this sort of tear. And these sorts of tears are always stitched by doctors in theatre. Third degree tears break into different categories. There are 3A tears, which only tear a small portion of what's called the external anal sphincter, one of the muscles controlling the bowel. Then there's a 3B tear, which tears 50% or more of that external anal sphincter. A 3C tear that tears the external anal sphincter completely and the internal anal sphincter. And finally, a fourth degree tear that tears into the lining of the anus, the mucosa. these tears are more difficult to repair. And for many years now, there's been a standard technique to try and repair and strengthen these muscles by trying to overlap the ends of the muscle rather than just bringing the torn edges together, because this gives a more robust result and therefore women have less symptoms postnatally. They get better functional result. These women that have had this sort of tear will usually have a follow-up appointment with a specialist, one of my urogynecology colleagues, and a scan to look at how the sphincter muscle has mended, to see if they need any ongoing treatment, and to support them with physiotherapy, pelvic floor exercises. Many women will recover very well from this sort of tear, but some women will have difficulties with their bladder and bowel control and need expert ongoing treatment and support. And this is why these women will be followed up. This sort of tear can be more common in certain situations, such as giving birth to perhaps a bigger baby or a baby that has its hand next to its head, a so-called compound presentation, or perhaps with a forceps birth. That brings me nicely to techniques designed to reduce tears, or at least the more severe ones. These days, we encourage perineal massage during late pregnancy. This involves massaging the perineal skin with a lubricant such as oil to make it more supple and stretchy in the last few weeks of the third trimester, towards the end of pregnancy, preparing for birth. And there is some evidence that although this doesn't prevent tearing completely, it may reduce the likelihood of a third or fourth degree tear. Then there's quite a lot of debate about whether doctors and midwives should have their hands on, pressing on that perineal skin as the baby's head crowns, applying some counter pressure to try and support the skin to attempt to prevent tearing, or being hands off, where the woman works with her instinct and you don't interfere with your hands at all. At the point of crowning, we will often tell a woman to stop pushing, or to pant, or to give little pushes, to just try and ease the baby's head out rather than it suddenly popping out like a cork out of a bottle and tearing the perineum in the process. Warm compresses have been shown, again, not to reduce tearing completely, but to reduce the likelihood of more severe tearing. So some midwives will put a warm swab on the perineum in the second stage, in the pushing stage, to try and prevent more severe tears. And then, of course, there are the positions in which you give birth. We know some positions are more likely to cause tears, particularly giving birth lying on your back or in lithotomy position, which I've mentioned in one of my earlier episodes. So if you have an epidural in your labour, it might be worth thinking about giving birth lying on your side, and that puts less pressure on your perineum. If you haven't had an epidural, of course, you've got a large range of choices about how you might give birth. And all fours may be beneficial. And yes, I am going to mention it. Of course, place of birth, so giving birth in a birth centre or having a home birth, if that's a choice open to you, both reduce the chance of severe tearing or the need for stitches. As, of course, does continuity of care, which we're working very hard on in England at the moment. Finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about episiotomies. An episiotomy is a cut. The aim of the cut is to prevent severe tearing, or that third or fourth degree tear I've mentioned. In the UK, generally, we perform what's called a right mediolateral episiotomy. That means we aim it towards the right side, away from the anus. Why do we give an episiotomy? Well, we can give it because the baby's distressed and we want to hurry up delivery. Most commonly, we give it when we're performing an assisted vaginal birth. So if we're pulling or guiding the baby's head out more rapidly, perhaps, than the woman would have pushed herself, then the head does not have as much time to gently, gradually stretch that pelvic floor and stretch that perineum in the way it would have done with a spontaneous birth. We're slightly rushing nature by over 3 or 4 contractions, helping the woman birth the baby's head in a much more rapid way. So in general, we give an episiotomy definitely with a forceps birth. And for a lot of Von Tu's suction cup births, we need to give an episiotomy too, just to make that extra space. An episiotomy can be beneficial because you can direct the direction of a tear. But some women will prefer to tear instead of have an episiotomy. Sometimes in a spontaneous birth, a midwife will give an episiotomy because she can see the perineum stretching and starting to tear, and she will give an episiotomy to try and control it because she can see the woman isn't going to get away with an intact perineum with no tear. I think sometimes there's a bit of a misconception that midwives and doctors want to perform an episiotomy because it might be easier to stitch. It isn't really any easier to stitch an episiotomy than a second degree tear. But it certainly is easier to stitch an episiotomy than a shattered perineum. And when I use the word shattered, I don't use it lightly. So some women will have some very difficult tears, perhaps multiple tears, or a tear up the vaginal wall at the side, a lateral wall tear, or what's called a bucket handle tear, where actually the perineum, the skin on the outside, is intact, but there's a deep tear, a bit like a bucket handle in a sort of semicircle, around the inside of the vagina. So when we see a woman is about to tear or signs that she is tearing and the perineum doesn't look like it's stretching, we will often suggest an episiotomy. And hopefully we will have had a discussion with that woman up front at an earlier point, either antenatally at 36 weeks when we're having that birth planning conversation, or during the earlier stages of labour, so that we know what her wishes are and whether or not she will want to have an episiotomy in that sort of situation. The NMPA data shows that around 22 to 23% of women will have an episiotomy. And that is certainly much more common in first-time mothers, many of whom will need some help with an assisted birth. Now, what about the aftermath? For most women, we will give them a pain-killing suppository at the end of when we've done the stitches. And that's to try and give good pain relief and keep the stitches more comfortable. I will usually explain to the woman that she will feel swollen, bruised and sore, certainly for a few days, perhaps a week to 10 days. And that's partly due to the stitches and the tear itself, but also through the passing of the baby down the birth canal and the birth itself. I usually suggest regular painkillers, making sure she's drinking plenty so she doesn't get dehydrated and therefore constipated. Trying to keep her bowels nice and regular with plenty of fruit and fibre in her diet. And if she's had a third or fourth degree tear, we will prescribe her laxatives so that she can go to the toilet more easily. We recommend keeping the tear clean and dry, rinsing it off with a bit of water after passing urine and going to the toilet, and patting it down gently. On the whole, it tends to heal very quickly, and women are often back to normal very rapidly. If the woman has excessive amounts of pain and remains very tender, or tenderness is increasing, it may be that she's got an infection in her stitches. One of the things that a postnatal midwife will do is regularly check the woman's stitches, have a look to make sure they're healing up well and that they look clean and that there's no problems. In the situation where the stitches get infected, we generally can treat with tablet antibiotics at home, and an infection usually will be very simply treated in a matter of days. If all is well, the stitches should get less and less painful day by day. So if your stitches are becoming more painful, that's a warning sign that you need to see your GP or midwife and get them checked out. In general, if there's an infection and the stitches come apart a little bit as a result, we don't tend to re-stitch. On the whole, it's not good to re-stitch infected tissue. It's better to treat with antibiotics and let your body do the healing that it needs to do itself. This can be frustrating because it can take the tear a little bit longer to heal up. But on the whole, the result at the end will be just as good. And your midwife and GP should be able to support you during this time and regularly check your stitches to make sure that they're moving in the right direction and that you're improving over time. As I mentioned at the beginning, stitches are far more common having your first baby. Many women having their second or subsequent baby will either not need any stitches or will need much fewer stitches than they did with their first birth. Now let's think about the zesty bit. The first thing is, make sure you're supporting women to give birth in a way that minimises tearing. And if a woman does tear, help her understand what is torn. Draw her a diagram. Show her how it's stitched, how to look after it as it heals, how to understand what's happened to her. Give her simple advice on pain relief, keeping it clean and dry, washing her hands before and after going to the toilet, and some advice on helping her body and her pelvic floor recover from birth. I've enclosed some useful links in the program notes that you can share with women during the postnatal period. If you're a pregnant woman listening to this, know that you can potentially minimise tearing through some of your choices. Also, think about perineal massage in late pregnancy. Would it be something you could undertake or do with your partner? But most of all, don't be fearful. Of course, tearing is something you'd like to avoid if possible. But know that many women experience tears in childbirth and heal up extremely well from the stitches they undergo. If you're especially worried about tearing because of something in your medical history, don't hesitate to talk to your doctor and your midwife during pregnancy, discuss your fears, and see what is the best advice for you in your personal situation. Explore some of the links that I've attached to today's programme and use it to think about your preparation, your birth preferences, and how you might recover and understand what's happened to you if you do tear or you've torn in the past at a previous birth. I do hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Obs Pod. Feel free to contact me on Twitter at FW Maternity or at the Obs Pod to ask me questions, give me topics for future episodes, or let me know what you think. It's absolutely fantastic when you get in touch. I really enjoy reading your comments. As usual, I've tried to include in the program notes some extra reading about this particular topic, both for professionals working in maternity care and for pregnant women using services. I'd like to reassure you that although I'm talking about my experiences working in maternity care, I take confidentiality very seriously and do not give any personal information about any of my patients. If you've enjoyed listening, I'd love you to recommend the OBS Pod to friends or colleagues, and please do leave me a review on whichever podcast directory you find my episodes. Many thanks for listening.